Welcome to 80s Music Exposed, the podcast in which we review all the best albums of the 80s, one month at a time. We will break them down, give you the skinny, and duke it out over whether you should or should not dig these back out again. If you are ready for an 80s music deep dive, from Public Enemy to Wham, Eno to XTC, Madonna, hair metal, reggae, and all points in between, then crank the boombox, turn the Walkman up to 10, and ooh, let's go. Now, from the kitchen, Chris and Henry.
And I've got new equipment everywhere.
Hello.
Hello.
We are giddy right now. We've upgraded all new equipment. We got all new equipment. We have the Rodecaster that I heard about on a big professional podcast, and I bought one, Henry. And
it looks great. It's it's I guess you'd call it clean lines, right?
Yeah, it's pretty clean. It's got everything. I mean, like we can. It's just going to be different.
Hit one of them pads. You want to do something?
I knew you wanted to hear this stuff.
Hit a pad.
Yeah, you're a sucker for that stuff, aren't you?
It gives you entirely too much power, I gotta say.
Yeah, I got a lot more power than you do.
The problem is, I need my own pad. That way, you can minimize what I'm saying by.
Right. Well, hopefully, folks, you'll bear with us. This is our first episode on the new equipment, and hopefully, it'll come out good. We think once we get used to this equipment, things are going to be a lot better for the show. So we're real excited.
So this is 80s Music Exposed, and we're really glad that you took the time to download our pod.
And Henry, we don't do this every episode, but I think we should. Let's do the plugs at the top.
Right. So if you like our show or you like the records we're choosing, please rate and review us on iTunes or YouTube or Spotify or wherever else you're listening.
That's right. And you can chat us up on Twitter at 80SEXPOSED, at 80s Exposed, or 80smusicexposed@gmail.com.
Chris's Twitter handle is at TCI Duke. Henry's Twitter handle, that's me, is at Hank G, HANKGEE. But, you know, something, maybe we should do this, just set up the premise of the show. Basically, what we've been doing is picking five albums for every month of the 80s, and some have been double months, right?
Right. So we've had double episodes for some months because there was just too many good records that month to pass up.
So we pick those, we listen to them, and break them down for you.
Yep. And this episode is for October of 1981. So Henry, we usually like to warm up with some significant events from that month.
Yep.
But this is our part two of October episode from 1981. So we already did that on the last episode. So I thought we would do some little bit of discussion about the show changes. The biggest one we introduced right off the bat with the new board, we're so excited about. But later in the episode, I think we can now have Megan Maddox live on the phone with us instead of pre-recording her parts.
That's right. And that really is more in line with the original idea.
Right.
You know, that we'd be able to have more of a dialogue. We had some technological limitations while we tried to learn about podcasting, for fuck's sake. I mean, like how it works.
Right.
And the details of it. And
and since we're in this for the long haul, we went ahead and laid down the cash for a new board. And hopefully we can do this. We're going to try later in the episode. Also, Henry, I saw this, and I you're going to think I'm lying, but I saw this like 2 hours before I saw you start texting about it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a festival coming up that I thought our listeners would probably be excited by, which is coming up actually now in 2020. It's called the Cruel World Festival. I believe it's in LA.
Okay.
And it's Saturday, May 2nd. Tell us some of the bands that we've got coming up for that.
Well, you know, if you're still listening to Morrissey, he's playing. Just so you know, Morrissey still has a career.
And he's headlining.
So we're looking at Morrissey, Bauhaus, Blondie,
Lil Devo, Echo and the Bunnymen, Psychedelic Furs, Violent Femmes,
The Church.
You're into that one, Henry.
I am. Public Image Limited. You're really into those guys.
Yep.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
He really loved that album. You should go back and listen to the one in which he loves
The
P.I.L. Flowers of Romance. Mm-hmm.
Gary Numan, Mark Allman, Berlin, Missing Persons. The list goes on and on and on.
How do you, I mean, it's an all-day festival.
Right.
D Devo gets to play a full set.
Well, I don't think so. When I counted, there's over 40 bands on this, unless they're doing double stages. Oh,
so these are just the highlights.
Well,
that you put on.
Yeah, I just put the highlights on there. There's more than 40 bands on the ticket. So I don't know, but look into it if you're interested. There's not a lot of information online yet except the lineup, but
so any of you folks that are on the left coast over there, if you go to the show, would you tweet us and let us know how it was? We're really into a lot of the bands on this list. So
that's right. So Henry, let's get into the albums of October, the second half of October of 1981.
All right.
And we're going to start with a little Olivia Newton-John, and this song the album is called Physical. But here it is, the song from the record, the title cut, is called Physical. All right, Henry, so that was The Immortal Physical by Olivia Newton-John.
Tell me that song isn't just delicious.
I mean, it's another one of those, we've talked about this before, that's so ubiquitous. I don't know if it's good or not. I like it, but
I know what you're saying. Like, it's hard, you can't even divorce it. Mostly, when you listen to the song, I'm not even sure you process that the song is good or bad. You just revisit a place in your life.
Yeah, it just
that you
is.
Were at then, right?
It is, right. It's not good or bad. It just is. You know what I mean?
We just reviewed Xanadu back in, it was the early, probably the first six or seven episodes of our pod.
Which was a movie soundtrack that she was the star of the movie. And
it was Olivia Newton-John and ELO. And the first half was all, was it all songs she was singing?
Yes.
But
they were ELO written songs.
Right.
Yeah, so this is coming close on the heels of that. I don't know what your take on this record is. I'm going to say, I guess because of Physical, the song,
mm-hmm.
which I was like, okay, I'm expecting a lot of this same quality from the album.
Right.
So I get in about three tracks into it, and they're nailing that new wavy keyboard. I can tell how they're taking her from. And just for a little context, mm-hmm. she did mostly country albums and things before Grease. She wasn't really a pop rock star. But they're kind of nailing it with these first couple tracks.
Well, I mean, you got to realize it was Grease, mm-hmm. right? Sandy 1, Sandy 2. Sandy 2 was the one with the leather, right?
Right.
She got sexy.
Yeah.
And then she did that record. It was called, I did a little research, Totally Hot, right? Which
sure.
was like people realize, oh, she's sexy.
Right.
Right. She could be sexy. Let's try to sell that. And then it was Xanadu. Yes.
But you're talking, this is album number 12.
Yeah, yeah. So she had a whole
there's
thing.
There's nine country records before
she was
Grease.
Goody Two Shoes, right?
Right. And so I know
at least that's a perception.
I know they're playing up on that. And a lot of people, from what I was reading in my research, liked this transition. They're not criticizing her for it. Yeah. My problem was, again, and I think I've talked about this with some other albums, it's not consistent. It kind of drops off the map to me about halfway through. They ran out of ideas. And then I really wanted to dog this song that's on there about dolphins. And I was just going to really... I was going to wreck it. And then I was like, oh, that's the only song on the album she wrote.
Yeah.
So they let her have one. So I don't want to wreck her for that.
I didn't think it was that bad, but I'm with you. Like, I picked up on the inconsistency of it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as bad as I expected. I expected to hate it. Like, I know that they sold the album based on the lead single. So I expected the rest of it to just be filler.
Well, you know what's shocking? Junk. I'd forgotten how much I knew the second single.
Yeah.
So when I heard that, I was like, oh, that I know that song. So there was a couple singles off this that were big. We can't talk about this album, though, Henry, without talking about the whole workout phenomenon that I think this album and video, along with the Jane Fonda workout, which I think we've talked about before, those things ushered in this whole era.
Right.
Aerobicize or jazzercise, I don't even know what you call it, but this made her that.
Right. The whole sexualized workout thing.
Right. And she rode that wave. I guess she was like, I'm going to date myself here, but that was kind of like a meme before there were memes. Like all of a sudden she just became this thing about working out.
And the cover of the single had her like really sweaty looking up.
Right.
And the photograph was taken by that Herb Ritts guy, the same guy that ended up doing Madonna's stuff with, I think it was True Blue or something. Where she, remember, she had the platinum hair. The same look.
Right, that 80s iconic Herb Ritts photographs. Also, it made me think of, did you remember there was a movie that was made after this that I think was trying to capitalize on this and the Jane Fonda thing? It had Jamie Lee Curtis in it.
Oh,
and it was about
and it also did it also star Travolta too?
Yeah, and they were all workout like people.
That was all. I didn't. There's a connection.
It was all around that same time period, and I think the studios tried to make a movie plot that coincided with this whole phenomenon. But something that did surprise me on this record, Henry, I wanted to get your thoughts on. There was one song on here that I was like towards the end that I was sitting there going, this sounds like something I've heard before. And I went and looked it up. It was a song that was written by Barry Gibb for the Streisand record Guilty that we had reviewed on our very first episode.
Do you remember which one
I
was going to,
I don't know why I didn't write
it. I read it myself, but I can't remember which song it was.
But Streisand turned the song down. And so Barry Gibb gave it to Olivia Newton-John. And if you know that context and listen to it, it sounds like a Bee Gees song.
But the same guy that did this album was the same one that did her other like country stuff later.
Isn't that crazy? See, I feel like they should have replaced him. They should have gotten somebody that
was
more up on.
But look how competent he did do it, though.
Like, well, but didn't you get the feeling of this whole thing is super competent?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is really competent, but it's not like groundbreakingly competent, you know.
Yep. I think I just like her, and I'm just, you know what I mean. I think at the end of it, I'm thinking, I think I'm an Olivia Newton-John fan.
Wow, that's a pretty big revelation, right there.
I like the way when she really goes. I spent like an hour watching the physical live show that she did.
Okay,
every hair in place.
Right
there, that band kicked ass.
The song was called, by the way, the Barry Gibb song was called Carried Away. Okay. It's the eighth song on the album. But yeah, check that out. If you want to compare it to the Barbara Streisand record, it is interesting.
This sounds
terrible. I think you're suckered in by something else than the music. I don't think you're getting your full.
There was no auto-tune back then.
But as a
she
kid.
She was on point. She was on her.
But as a kid, you were probably really into Sandy too, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I was into both Sandy 1 and Sandy 2.
Okay, that's what's doing it.
I mean, we were all of 11. How old were we?
Well, we were 10.
10, almost 11?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you this, Henry. I remember the physical video. I think we need to talk about this, too, real quick. I remember that video as a kid. I loved it for her. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it making fun of fat people. The whole video.
That wasn't a thing back then. But it was okay to do that back then.
I mean, the whole video is a fat shame.
Yeah, and they wouldn't play parts of it on MTV because it turned out two of the guys were gay for each other.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Two of the characters in the
video. Okay, and so
remember they went.
So it wasn't the fat shaming that turned MTV off.
Right. It was the gay stuff.
Yeah,
the song was banned and stuff in different places, which is weird to think of today. Like,
it really is.
You know, how long was this? 40 years ago that.
But I will say this, it kind of made me feel icky that she's standing around fat shaming a bunch of people.
That was okay back then. You could make fun of fat people back then.
I guess you could.
Crazy.
Well, Henry, I'm going to give this one a thumbs down. It sounds like you might give it a thumbs
up.
Yeah,
I'm going to give it a thumbs up, and wow. I can't tell you why.
Right.
I just like the way the woman sings.
Okay.
It's fun.
You're looking through this with Olivia Newton-John.
I think so.
No, with Sandy from Grease Blinder.
Yeah, Olivia, she can do no wrong.
Okay,
like, okay. This is Olivia Newton-John.
I'll give you a pass on this one.
You know, come on.
What's our next record?
Our next record is The Sound. And the album is called From the Lion's Mouth. But the song that we're going to play for the folks is one called Winning. Started fading on that little delicious part right there.
I like fading on delicious part. My nickname in high school was Delicious Fade.
We somehow, you and I got wind of their first album.
We
do. You remember that?
Yes.
And we were like, what the hell?
How did we miss this? Was my first thought.
How did we miss these people?
How could we not know? This was in 1995 when Henry and I were trying to do a band. Unbeknownst to us, this is what we wanted to sound like. This is what we were trying to be in the sound, and we just didn't know it. Henry, this is exactly, I say this sometimes, this is the reason I do this show, like to find albums like this that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
This album hits all the bells and whistles for me of a great post-punk, early 80s album. And I don't know if you fantasize about this sometimes. This is how sad my life is. I fantasize that there are bands still out there that were amazing post-punk early 80s bands that no one ever heard of that I'm just going to discover one day and be like, oh shit, Henry.
Every 2 months, it seems like.
Bet you haven't heard The Sound.
Every 2 months, it seems like somebody gets dug up that makes my mouth drop. You know?
Yeah.
This is one of them. Hell, even guys from the, I was watching YouTube videos of guys from the UK who were just finding out about The Sound, which was amazing. Guys our age.
Right. And so this album that we are listening to is called From the Lion's Mouth. It was their second album. I put it right in the boat with Joy Division. If you haven't heard.
Yeah, that's the common.
Haven't heard them before.
Mm-hmm. That's a common like comparison.
I honestly think my money, they sound like what Joy Division would sound like if Joy Division wasn't so depressing. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They're kind of like a lighter version of Joy Division.
Yeah, and I hate to say that because it sounds like I'm diminishing him in some way by saying that, doesn't it?
It does.
But the way that I like to, if somebody were to ask me, the way I describe it is it's Joy Division with a much broader palette.
Right.
And that might have been why they didn't do as well.
Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing about it was, I found this interesting, they lasted around until 1987.
Huh.
They did three more records, but it was sad. I kind of jumped forward because I feel like this record is a special record that we're not going to come back to The Sound.
Nope.
Oh, Henry, they just got, I feel like they must have just gotten into this, we've got to do something to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
Their last record doesn't sound anything like this. It just sounds like happy-go-lucky.
Is it bad?
Yeah, it's just like swirly guitar jangle.
Did you get a chance to look at any of their live performances?
I did not.
You can see, too, why. Like, their delivery. You know, Ian Curtis had this dark, quirky way about him.
Right.
They were mysterious. I don't think that the sound presented in a very mysterious way.
Right. They don't sound as mysterious.
When they played.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
In fact, I mean, you could make a case that they were sonically more interesting.
I would make the case that for Henry and Chris in the early 90s, I would have preferred this to Joy Division.
Maybe.
Because I wanted to be a little bit more upbeat.
And I think their name was also a barrier. Calling your band The Sound,
right.
It's just, it's so...
Right. It's kind of like The Who. If The Who had not made it, it would have been a tough...
It's
tough
like sell. Calling your band The Band.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's like, I almost feel like I have to say when I tell people about this record now, I'm talking about a band before I say mm-hmm. The Sound, because people are like, the sound of what? Interesting, though, that a lot of this came down to, from what I read, John Peel. So there were these things called the John Peel sessions mm-hmm. back in the early 80s, in the 90s as well. But mm-hmm. he was a famous DJ in England, and a lot of bands he would have come in and do Peel sessions where they would re-record in a single day the songs from their record just for that show. And then they'd mm-hmm. release them and stuff like that. But a lot of the bands that we now think of 80s icon, a big part of the reason they broke was because they did a Peel session. And some of the stuff I read about the sound was John Peel never particularly liked the sound. Mm-hmm. He thought they were too light. And he was such a big proponent of Joy Division. He never asked the sound to come in for a Peel session. And so that was at that early stage, mm-hmm. if you didn't get a Peel session, it could have been the difference between us now knowing who you were and not knowing.
So he was the tastemaker of the time.
For sure.
And didn't get picked up.
Right. Right. For whatever reason, it wasn't his cup of tea. So,
So my understanding is that Adrian Borland dealt with mental illness most of his life.
Okay.
Schizophrenia.
And he was the main songwriter, right? And the main guy, driving force behind the sound.
Right. Eventually, you know, he did other projects after the sound, but eventually he gave up the ghost and jumped in front of a train.
Holy cow. I didn't read that.
At Wimbledon Station, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. And that's how he did it. That's how he offed himself.
Well, I just came back from London and I went through Wimbledon Station. I wish you'd have told me I'd have taken you a picture of that spot.
Interesting.
That's the kind of vacations I like to do.
Macabre play.
Yeah, like yoga.
But yeah, he had had enough and decided to check out then. But I think he was probably even a schizophrenic episode or something. I don't know. Man. So big thumbs up on this one for me.
Yeah, I'm going to highly recommend this. This is a find.
Borland is like a cross between Ian Curtis and maybe some Ian McCullough. I mean, I even heard some Bono-y kind of... Did you pick up on some of that?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I was like, well, am I fooling myself? I mean, we are going to talk about a U2 album later.
I mean,
am I just making that happen?
No, because I think he's more of a yeller like Bono was in the old days. You know, Bono would...
Yeah.
To me, Bono screams a lot more than he sings.
Yep.
But he's more of a singer than Ian Curtis. You know, to me, Ian Curtis was more of he talked in a distinctive way kind of thing, you know. So I'm going to recommend this for sure.
Yeah, big thumbs up.
Okay, what's next, Henry?
Okay, you're going to intro the next one.
Oh, am I good? Yes. Okay, this is going to be Quarter Flash, the band, from the album Quarter Flash.
Right.
I wish the song was called Quarter Flash. That would be great. But the song is called Harden My Heart.
I mean, I'm sitting in the back of my parents' car. I mean, I am right there. in my chest. That's where I am. It's so weird. I mean, physical, that song does that. This song, I mean, my parents are sitting in the front seat and I'm right there listening to that.
Yeah, I
so
mean,
it's amazing.
Which speaks to the power of that, because you absolutely loathe saxophone. Yeah. And you're fine with that.
I got a text message from him while I was waiting for my kid. He just goes, quarter flash, sax.
Oh, well, man. I'm sitting here thinking,
I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of another album.
What would be the most nightmarish scenario for Henry? A female vocalist who plays saxophone as well. Because I did not know she was the sax player.
I didn't either.
That was shocking to me.
Well, had you seen the actual video?
No, I don't remember the video.
Oh my God, dude.
So I don't remember anything about Quarter Flash.
Have you pulled up the video?
No, I'll have to check God. It out.
I should have asked you to pull that up.
I went through my brain trying to figure out, do you know of any other band where the singer is a saxophone player as well?
That's,
I'm sure there is some, but I mean, I couldn't think of one off the
Clarence,
top of my head.
Clarence never sang.
I mean, I think he might have had his own. Right? He might have had his own band, but not in the E Street band, right? So when I started, I did look her up though, and to me, Henry, her and her husband. I guess when I started looking them up. You know how when you look somebody up on Google, sometimes pictures of them now come up first.
Yep.
And so there's this older lady and an older guy, and he's got a guitar, and she's standing with a flute, I think. It reminded me so much of Will Ferrell and
on
Saturday Night Live when the two...
I'm so sorry, Quarter Flash.
The skits where they would do the... I don't know if you remember those skits.
Oh, yeah. We're going to play this song.
Right? Oh, yeah. Okay.
We're going to take you to the funky place.
So now I couldn't hear any of the rest of the song on this album outside of that. These are two of the whitest people I've ever encountered in my life.
I think they were trying to be Chicago, kinda.
Wow.
I don't know.
And I don't like Chicago, and that's way bigger either. A compliment. I just think they're trying to be. After hearing this song, which I have to admit I like, I've never heard an album I hate as much as this after hearing one song.
I mean, I don't.
Total garbage.
I mean.
And it's garbage.
You got to see this.
It's garbage.
There's another hit song on this thing.
I couldn't tell.
Is it the Find Another, isn't that?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, that Find Another song. Yeah, that was on the radio. Yeah.
Yeah.
This sounds like, though, that kind of band that you forget about from the 80s that put this schlocky, like Sylvester Stallone's brother, like Frank Stallone, right. This like shitty, like soundtracky kind of music, which I didn't realize until doing the research. They did do a Fast Times at Ridgemont High soundtrack song. This sounds like shitty B movie 80s soundtrack music is what it sounds like.
So I know, I feel bad about it.
It's terrible.
I'm about to
even her name, Rindy Rose, sounds like.
I feel bad. They just seem like nice people now. I did exactly what you do. So I looked and I'm like, and then I started writing my spiel here.
Okay. And I also need to talk about this, Henry. I have to talk about.
They will make room for her to blow that horn, by God. One way or the other.
There's two songs, okay? There's two songs in the middle of this album. One is called Critical Times, and the other is called Cruising with the Deuce.
What?
As
the
bad
Deuce?
As Cruising with the Deuce.
What does that mean?
As bad as this record is, there are two songs that stand out as boners among boners that are so bad. They don't even fit with the Quarter Flash. They're not her singing. There's two songs that some other guy sings. So I was like, I got to dig into this. So in the beginning, Quarter Flash was from Portland before Portland was cool.
Right.
And they were the combination of two other bands.
Okay.
And they put the bands together. One was called like Mama Pork Chop, and the other was something horrible. But the singer from the other band came in with them, was a guitar player, and he joined as the second guitar player in the melding of the two bands. And I think they must have worked out a deal where he's like, I still get to sing two songs. And Henry, you've been in bands enough to know how that works
out. Yeah, I get some. Yeah.
So right in the middle, there's this giant turd called Critical Times. It's a piano ballad. It sounds like that 70s blues bar band shit that we loathe with this guy singing. It's absolutely horrible. It's so bad. I feel like we should probably play it.
All right.
Just for a minute.
Crank it up for a second.
If you'll cover until I pull up some Critical Time.
Okay. So while he's doing that, I do want to tell you about this music video. It's probably the weirdest music video I've seen in a long time. If you can imagine Soft Filter and her, you know, and her curly haired makeup and everything, and suddenly there's a midget.
A what?
A fucking midget man.
did you just say there's a midget?
It's a midget.
Henry meant little person, but...
A dwarf? A midget? Whatever you want to call it.
I think I better go save you and go right into Critical Times. Yeah, this is Quarter Flash, folks. I think he's got something stuck in his throat, too.
Is he trying to be British?
All the things. He sounds like the guy from like The Greatest American Hero.
Believe it or not.
Wait till you hear this chord. On the same album with Harden Your Heart.
Oh, y'all forgot. See, this is not yacht rock anymore. Y'all are supposed to be playing like saxophone rock music, not this.
You want to hear bad, though.
Y'all are not.
Try like, his other song on the record, Cruising with the Deuce. Okay, it starts out
the interesting sound quality little, in this new system is amazing.
Little drum beat.
Why? I mean, the dude thinks he's British.
What do you think Randy Rose is doing right now?
Waiting to blow her horn.
He reminds me of that guy from Styx, Dennis DeYoung. This is like the worst REO Speedwagon ever. I can't believe that those didn't make an impression on your brain, because those were absolutely mystifyingly horrible on an already horrible album, in my opinion.
I mean, on the record, there was on the video, there was a fire juggler and they're walking around.
This is the video with the midget.
She's walking around in wood paneling, which, by the way, she has a leotard on, just so you know.
Was the thing. That was happening. It was happening.
And then there's this kid in front of the mirror, a child. It's not the dwarf little person, midget person. It's a kid. And they're in front of the mirror. And there's three of them with white robes on. And then she's playing the saxophone again, that one like. And then some kid playing the keyboards that has no relationship to the music at all.
It's right.
Not matching it up at all. And now it's some guy, a bunch of guys with a motorcycle helmet on. Did Daft Punk steal it from them?
Maybe they did.
And so then again with this little person. And then the motorcycle helmet guy has a tuxedo. I'm telling you, somebody needs to hold Daft Punk to the fire and say, I know you ripped this off from Quarter Flash.
Okay, as long as there's not a video for Cruising with the Deuce, I'll check it out. Henry, I'm going to give this 0 saxophones out of 5.
I give it a 0.5 just because that video.
All right, I'll take that. So, yeah, that's Quarter Flash by Quarter Flash. Okay, Henry, so you can go ahead and introduce the next album.
Okay, so the next record we're going to consider is a little band called U2. The album that we're considering is one called October, but the song that we're going to play is one called Rejoice. This is a Rolling Stone 5-star album. You could also consider this under the banner of Shit We Like.
Sure.
Here it is.
Thank you.
All right. So this might be the 20th time that I've listened to this album, I think, since I knew about it. It might be the first time listening to it now, this time around, might be the first time I've heard it in about 7 or 8 years. My introduction to U2 right around the time when the Joshua Tree was around, but you and I had just become friends, and so we went back to the Unforgettable Fire. You showed me that. I was like, oh, this is great. And then you had War. So War was like the one at the time that you sold that one hard. So War was the one, and then it was I think is that Sunday Bloody Sunday.
No, that was on War. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's the one that had Sunday, Bloody Sunday. For me, that was the one. But because the same kid is on the cover of Boy and War, I jumped over
October
and listened to Boy because that was the one that you had that looked like the other one. So there was a connection between those two. Somehow I knew that October existed, but it wasn't the one. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It seemed almost, for whatever reason, it was like it felt like an EP or something. Like it wasn't the real album.
Well, that, you know? Feel that you get, it turns out that is, you're feeling the correct thing. So even that cover, what you just made, that explanation, I think perfectly sums up. October was a rushed record that they were not really ready to put out. Obviously, they thought about a lot about Boy and War, and almost the two of them they put together. October, I don't think even the band members really wanted to put October out. I think it was more of a, the record company was saying they had to do it. And God bless Bono and The Edge, because by War, I think they started making the decisions the way they wanted to make them, not really worried about what the record company was saying. For me, though, Henry, in a overall with U2, there's two parts to U2 across their history. The band from the beginning, Bono, Larry Mullins, and Adam Clayton, are pretty much fleshed out from Boy. Yeah, you get the same Bono, the same Adam Clayton, and the same Larry, whatever.
Mullins.
You get the same guys on all the records. The only two differences in all the different phases of U2, if there is such a thing, are The Edge and production. So the first three records are the Steve Lillywhite. Which it's amazing that they started off with this iconic 80s producer, Steve Lillywhite. But for me, and I think we talked about this with Boy, this is still, you are mid-period Edge still trying to figure out what guitar to use. And he's using this Gibson Explorer, which now sounds a little less rough and ready than on Boy. He's starting to put some more effects on there, but it's still a Gibson with humbucker pickups. So it still sounds kind of dirty and cranky. He's going to perfect that on War. It's gonna get more affected and toned down a little bit. That's, to me, War is the Steve Lillywhite perfected U2. And then they decide to jump off a cliff and start working with Daniel Lanois and Brian Eno. And to me, that becomes the golden era.
The golden era
of U2 with Joshua Tree and Unforgettable Fire.
Right.
But this is like a placeholder album. I think they would even say that, between Boy and War.
And I'm almost glad that I'm glad that I didn't listen to it really deeply. Now that I hear it now, knowing what U2 kind of becomes, right?
Right.
Fast forward 20 years into the future. It's like, it's an accidental for me foreshadowing of, you got two ways of looking at it. It's, you could see how they could get pompous. I could see the roots of that tree starting to form. If this was bluster and raw ambition without the songs.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of these songs were written like while they were on tour and on soundstage. And you can hear,
but they were still U2. They were still arms wide still open U2.
Right. And they're still, you know, with Bono, you're going to be super earnest and you're going to be super. But like, you can hear on this album, more so than when The Edge starts figuring it out, there's weird, like, places where he thinks he's got to put a solo in or a break, where all of a sudden you've got just a drum and bass breakdown because he still thinks there's got to be a bridge with a break in it. And it's like he outgrows that by War, and War becomes much better. It's more lean, and it's like, you know, I don't have to put a silly guitar solo and every song. And then by Unforgettable Fire, I think Eno, you know how Brian Eno was probably going, I don't think there should ever be a guitar solo. In fact, don't play the guitar. Make your guitar sound like not a guitar.
Like a not a guitar. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Like he's probably doing the antithesis of everything in the studio, you know. But yeah, I would say this is, if there is such a thing as a throwaway U2 album, this is the most throwaway of the first five or six.
But that's the problem, is when you, because you're not unnecessarily distracted by the quality of the song, you're then left with seeing them as just U2.
Well, and
not
I think,
as, not as, they're not U2 with the amazing songs. They're U2, the sum of their parts are working out their stuff.
And I think my way of saying what you just said is, if I've only got time to listen to some U2 records, I'm not going to waste my time with October, because War is better and we got a lot better stuff to come. This is an okay record, but I'd rather listen to War or Boy for me.
Yeah, that's kind of where it was. I just, I can't say it's bad, but I found it's interesting in hindsight to hear that play out in their, you know, in their catalog. All right. So I guess we have one more record to listen to.
Yeah, I think we've got one more.
We saved the best for last, didn't we?
I guess you could say that. I mean,
talk about iconic record covers, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
I mean, think about it. I think it is. It's considered. I mean, I think if you put it in front of people, they'd be like, yep.
I will say this for that record cover. It's the best thing about this album to me. But the band is called Loverboy, Henry.
Uh-huh.
And the album is called what?
Get Lucky.
And the song we're going to hear is called Working for the Weekend. You're laughing.
You're terrible. So the cover of this record, I don't know if you
know. So you're going to go right back to the cover.
It is actually the butt of a 13-year-old girl. Did you know that?
This is just speaking to how much this record is not. We're not going to like this. I can tell, because you went right back to just talking about this cover.
It's the photographer's daughter.
So is there anything about the music on this record that interests
you? I'm not really on the music. He's the fucking going to talk about that.
Okay, give us more about this cover. So it's the photographer's 13-year-old daughter, which is kind of weird that he would want to take the picture of his own daughter.
And the photographer, you know that it's got crossed fingers behind it, right?
Right.
They had a bunch of hand models for that.
Okay.
It isn't just some dude in the band.
Well, you know, two of the main dudes in the band wore red leather pants for the whole tour because they wanted it to be thought of that it was there.
That's amazing.
At their rear end.
I mean,
for, to me, this was like a Foreigner cover band without the hits is what I was getting, picking up from this record.
I guess so.
I kept waiting for one of the Foreigner hits.
I felt stupider for having listened to it.
Wow. That's a good ringing endorsement.
I mean, have you seen, if you've seen the video for Hot Girls in Love on the next record, I mean, I'd hope that listening to this album would redeem it in some way. Like I could find the lost power pop classic in here, or it would change my perception of them. Kind of like Billy Squire's album did that for me. I didn't give Billy Squire much credit at all in my mind. And then I listened to his album. I'm like,
He
had the songs.
Yeah. I would admit there's more there for Billy Squire.
So all the songs that Loverboy will do and have ever done will include microphone sharing.
I love this. I heard you talking about this earlier.
Which will remind everybody of their weird ass like band name again. Because it looks like they're about to go down on a phallus together.
Did you not feel like though that they feel like microphone sharing is the coolest thing in the world?
Yeah, yeah. Like leaning on each other.
Yeah. For sure.
Like bro stuff. And Loverboy will never be anybody's favorite band. No children will ever be conceived to Loverboy. If it did happen, that child would surely be like miscarried or aborted.
Oh my word, Henry.
No kid will ever wax poetic about how they were someone's awakening moment to music.
So you really,
Trump loves Loverboy.
I'm going off on the sound effects there, Henry.
So, I mean, why did they have three multi-platinum albums? I'll tell you why they had three multi-platinum albums. The same reason Donald Trump is president of the United States.
Man, you are just going for it. So I actually wrote in my notes, I hate this album, but it's very interesting.
Time has not been kind to these guys.
Oh, you didn't look them up now, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know this also, Henry, that Bryan Adams co-wrote one of the songs on this?
Bryan Adams,
fellow Canadian rocker Bryan Adams. He co-wrote the song Jump, and not the Van Halen Jump.
Loverboy is to Foreigner what Nickelback was to Creed. I fucking hate that.
I'm going to ban sound effects.
You have to. Time was kind to Rick Springfield.
Was that a song he had?
Time was kind to Cyndi Lauper.
Was that a song that? Oh. I was just making a joke. Yeah, I would ask you this. Have they dropped the bandana?
So his bandana has gotten thicker.
So they haven't dropped the bandana.
So he does I know bandanas. I wear one around my neck all the time.
Yeah, you're a big bandana guy.
I'm a bandana around the neck kind of guy.
You are.
Me and Marty Stewart.
Marty Stewart.
Me and Marty Stewart love to do a neck situation.
Oh, talk about 80s country. We're going to have to review a Marty Stewart record just for Henry. All right, that's enough Loverboy. Let's go see what Megan's got going on.
Okay.
Hello, Megan, are you there?
I am. Woo! How fancy.
We're actually talking live.
You should put like little rings in there. Megan, pick up the phone.
I've been so caught off guard. Like when you started playing music, I'm like, what is happening right now? Right. Like not used to that. Like,
well, yeah. In your defense, yeah, we just kind of sprung it on you right there. So you did fine.
You gotta throw people in sometimes.
This is closer to like the idea that we initially had where we get to talk to you about the thing.
It is better. And speaking of ridiculous, quarter flash.
Oh, boy.
So, oh, my God. Like, seeing so many, like, quarter flash records. Like, my thought when I hear quarter flash is I imagine a dusty-ass crate in a flea market. And seeing I know exactly the logo. What it's, like, usually in red font, I feel like.
Oh, they've got a logo. Maybe. Really?
It's just the name. It's just quarter flash.
Yeah. Like, well, you had to have a logo back in the early
80s,
so
right.
Well, yeah, and I never really knew like what they sounded like at all. Like I just knew that they were like late 70s, early 80s rock, probably.
Yeah.
But I decided because they were on the list, I was like, okay, I'll listen to them. I'll give it a shot. And all of a sudden, it was just like a female singer, and I wasn't expecting that. To be perfectly honest, I was kind of shocked. I was like, "Oh, okay." Like it just sounded so like early '80s, just like her voice and the music. And I love '80s music. Don't get me wrong, but this is just like cheesy '80s kind of rock.
What about it specifically was so shitty?
It's not shitty. Like the production is good. You know, it's like well done for what it is. It just sounds really dated to me. I don't know why.
Did you know that the female singer is also the saxophone player?
What a segue, because I was just going to mention the saxophone. Like usually I really like saxophone and I feel like I just had a conversation with somebody about how I'm like, you know, saxophones, like they don't get used anymore in music. And why is that? It sounds really cool. And then I heard this tonight, and I'm like, I don't even know if I like saxophone.
Now you don't like it anymore. They did have the good sense to like roll that high chirpy stuff off there, you know?
What did you, Megan, what did you think? We didn't want to take up all your time on Quarter Flash because that's total garbage. What did you think about some of the other albums from this month?
Okay, well, like the U2 record, not one of my favorites. Okay. Personally, like, it's just kind of okay. I prefer, like, their mid-80s to, like, early 90s stuff. That's mm-hmm. my favorite, so I'm not going to waste too much time on that. And then Loverboy, obviously, like, I'm sorry, I don't care about Loverboy. Like, I just don't give a shit.
I don't know anybody that does, but, yeah, even the Loverboy guys I don't think give a shit. But
still out there doing the damn thing, though. Like, there's that's still true. Somebody cares somewhere because they're still touring. And I really like Olivia Newton-John's voice. I mean, it's pretty, like, fluffy music. Yeah. You know, it's really light. But I think she has a really pretty voice. Very pleasant. Like, she has a very good voice. Like, she can actually sing.
See, I think
really well.
I think both of you just like her as a person. You give her way too much credit because she seems nice.
Sandy from Greece.
Yeah, like, see, the Sandy factor was big with him.
I know. I told Chris, I said, I just can't hate on Olivia Newton-John. There's just nothing.
She could be like a huge bitch. I don't know. But
yeah, well, I'll never know. I don't care.
And then my pick or whatever for this month would have to be Sound.
Right.
I really wasn't familiar with that album. Like, I've heard of them before just because very, you know, post-punk.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's my thing. And I'm familiar with the name, but I never really had listened to, like, any of their music. So I saw them on the list as well, and I checked it out, and I really, really liked it.
Yeah, we kind of had the same reaction. We didn't – it was like a find for us.
So if you were going to compare them to Joy Division, which one comes out on top? Honestly,
I know what you're trying to do.
We're trying to get you on record trashing Joy Division.
Say what?
I'm still going to pick Joy Division.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, Megan, it was good talking to you live for the first time. This is awesome.
Yeah.
We appreciate you coming on live.
Absolutely.
Feels like a real show now.
Yeah.
I know. I'm looking forward to talking more to you guys in the future. And yeah, that was really fun. So even though you kind of made me listen to some not so great music, but there were some good albums too. So
yeah. We'll try. This was a bad one to work you in on, maybe, but
No,
I kind of like
perfect.
Right. Well, give everybody your Twitter handle that wants to come out or would like to contact you.
Cool. Absolutely. So, if you would like to follow me on Instagram, I'm Bastards of Young 92. I'll like the replacement song that played before my segment that I didn't know was going to happen this time. And then Megan Maddox on Facebook, and then all of our social media accounts like 80 Music Exposed on Facebook, at 8374 on Instagram, and then 80s Exposed on Twitter as well. So it was really nice talking to you guys.
All right, great.
Thank you. And get ready. Here comes some more replacements music.
Take care, Megan.
I'm always ready.
All right.
Bye. Bye, Megan.
Bye.
Henry, so I thought that went pretty well talking live with Megan.
I mean, that was the first time we've done that.
I thought it was pretty cool.
She didn't call us assholes or anything.
You were really hoping for that. I think.
I was kind of hoping that she would call us out on something, but it looks like we're still cool.
Yep.
Somehow we still managed to keep up with the cool kids.
Yeah, for sure.
On these things.
Henry, tell us, what is your pick of the episode?
I'm all in with Maddox on this one with From the Lion's Mouth. That just trumps all these. Right?
Yeah, I hate to make it 3 for 3, but I didn't actually have a recommendation of any of the other records but that one to listen to, so I got to go with that one. From the Lion's Mouth by the band The Sound.
The Sound.
All right, Henry, take us out.
All right, let's see. Hang on. Many thanks to our show producer, Greg Levin, and if you like the way we sound, you can talk to him at Urban Dweller. That's URBNDWELLR on Instagram or at NBC Greg on Twitter. We are thankful to have him on our team. Many thanks to Megan Maddox, our social media maven. So if you want to start a social media argument with us, you'll probably be arguing with her.
That's right.
Any saved rounds, Chris?
Nope.
Guess what?
What's that?
I made you a mixtape.